This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Night sky for May 2017. As darkness falls, the two bright stars Castor and Pollux of Gemini will be setting above the western horizon. Further round towards the south is the constellation of Leo, the Lion. Coming further over, there'll be a bright star, Arcturus, which is the brightest star in the constellation of Bootes. And high overhead is Ursa Major, and of course, the bright stars that make up the Plough. With binoculars, if you haven't looked before, look at the central star of the three that make up the handle of the Plough, I suppose, or the saucepan in America, and you'll see it's actually a double star system, Alcor and Mizar. But in fact, with a small telescope, you can see that, in fact, one of these is itself a double. Beginning to rise over in the east and rising, obviously, during the night, we have Vega, the brightest star in Lyra. And following that is Deneb, somewhat to the northeast, the brightest star in Cygnus the Swan. So it's not a bad time to observe the sky, not quite as rich as it sometimes is, either in the summer when Vega and Deneb and Altair, forming the summer triangle, have come round, or in the winter when we have Orion, Taurus, and so on. So there we go. Well, what about the planets? Well, it's a great month to observe Jupiter. It came into opposition on April the 7th, so this month transits in the late evening and is visible rising in the east at dusk. It's moving in retrograde motion, lying in Virgo, initially some 9 degrees over to the right of its brightest star, Spica. This increases to 11 degrees as May progresses. The size of Jupiter's disk decreases slightly from 43.5 to 40.8 arc seconds during May, with its magnitude reducing very slightly from -2.4 to -2.3. With a small telescope, one should easily be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere, sometimes the Great Red Spot, and up to 4 of the Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Saturn. As May begins, Saturn rises around 11:30 p.m. BST and will be highest in the pre-dawn sky at about 4 a.m. By the end of May, it will rise around 9:30 p.m. BST and transit, that's due south, around 2 a.m. BST. Lying in the western part of Sagittarius, its diameter increases from 17.8 to 18.3 arc seconds during the month, as its brightness increases slightly from magnitude +0.3 to +0.1. It'll be high enough in the southeast in the hours before dawn to make out the beautiful ring system, which, at over 26 degrees to the line of sight, are virtually as open as they ever become. If only it were higher in the ecliptic. Its elevation this year never gets above 18 degrees, and so the atmosphere will hinder our view of this most beautiful planet. Well, Mercury, very short. Mercury is lost in the glare of the sun this month, so cannot be observed. Well, we've been seeing Mars for months now. It currently lies in Taurus, initially making a shallow triangle with Aldebaran to its lower left and the Pleiades cluster to its lower right. In early May, Mars has an elevation of about 11 degrees above the western horizon at sunset, but this reduces to 5 degrees by month's end, when Mars will be lost in the sun's glare, basically all summer. By month's end, it will lie some 6.5 degrees over to the left of Beta Tauri, Alnath. Its brightness falls slightly during the month from magnitude +1.6 to +1.7, while its angular diameter falls from 3.9 to 3.7 arc seconds. No details would be expected to be seen on its salmon pink surface. Venus. Venus rises in the east in the morning twilight on the first of the month and climbs a little higher each morning as May progresses. On May the 1st, the disk, forming a crescent 38 arc seconds high, is just 27% lit, shining with a magnitude of -4.7, basically its maximum brightness. By the end of the month, Venus shines at magnitude -4.5, with its angular size reduced to 25 arc seconds, whilst the illuminative fraction increases to 48%. It is then close to its greatest elongation from the Sun at 46 degrees, which it will reach on June the 3rd. But due to the shallow angle that the ecliptic makes to the horizon at this time of year, even then it will only have an elevation of some 16 degrees at sunrise. But what about the highlights? Well, as I've said, it's a great month to observe Jupiter. It's moving down the ecliptic and currently lies in Virgo. It reaches an elevation of 36 degrees when it crosses the meridian. An interesting observation is that the great red spot appears to be diminishing in size. At the beginning of the last century, it spanned some 40,000 kilometres across, but now only appears to be about 16,500 kilometres across, less than half the size. The shrinking rate appears to be accelerating, and observations indicate that it's now reducing in size by about 580 miles per year. I wonder, will it eventually disappear? Well, on the night sky page, just put in night sky Jodrell Bank into Google, or another, many of the other search engines, I give a list of the best evening times during May when you can observe the great red spot, which at the times I give should lie on the central meridian of the planet. On the 4th and 5th overnight, after midnight, the moon occults the double star 49 Leonis, just after 0020 BST, the dark limb of the moon will occult the two stars forming 49 Leonis at magnitudes +5.8 and +7.9, separated by 2 arc seconds. As a result, the starlight will take longer to be extinguished than you would expect from a single star. With a good telescope, and if the seeing were good, it might be possible to split the pair using high magnification and then see each component disappear in turn. Well, before dawn on May the 5th and the 6th, we have a chance to see the Eta Aquarid meteor shower. It's one of the finest showers you can see in the southern hemisphere, but for us, sadly, may only be glimpsed in the pre-dawn sky in the southeast around 90 minutes before dawn. Sadly, this year, the peak is when the moon is coming towards full, but happily, at that time, it'll be low on the western horizon, so there'll still be some moonlight to hinder our view, but it's a chance of seeing at least a few meteors. And quite nicely, on the 15th of May in the evening, the four Galilean satellites all lined up on one side. That'd be quite a nice thing to have a look with a small telescope. On the 22nd of May, at dawn, Venus will be seen over to the left of a very thin, waning crescent moon. During the last 10 days of the month, from about the 22nd to the 31st of May, there's a chance of observing comet 2015 V2 brackets Johnson. So with no moonlight to hinder our view, binoculars or a small telescope could be used to spot comet Johnson as it moves down through the constellation of Bootes, closing in at the end of the month on the bright star Arcturus. It might then reach magnitude +6, so should be easily visible in binoculars. And on the night sky page, I give a chart showing its position during those 10 days. On the 27th of May, around midnight, there's a chance of seeing a couple of shadow transits. Around 2320 UT, the shadow cast by Ganymede will begin to pass across the Jovian disk, leaving the disk at about 0011 UT on the 28th. During this time, it might be possible to spot Io moving across the disk, with its shadow then falling onto the disk at about 0025 UT. So if you don't mind staying up late and it's clear, could well be worth watching. On the 29th to the 31st of May after sunset, a crescent moon passes the beehive cluster in Cancer on its way towards Regulus in Leo. Firstly, a thin waxing crescent moon will pass the beehive cluster on the 29th and will reach Regulus in Leo on the 31st. And I usually point out something on the moon to have a look at. On the nights of May the 3rd and the 16th, the Hyginus Ryl lies close to the Terminator and so will be best seen. For a time, a debate raged as to whether the craters on the moon were caused by impacts or volcanic activity. We now know that virtually all were caused by impact, but it's thought that the Hyginus crater that lies at the centre of the Hyginus Ryl may well be volcanic in origin. It is an 11-kilometre-wide rimless pit, in contrast to the impact craters which have raised rings. And its close association with the Ryl of the same name associates it with internal lunar events. It's thought that an explosive release of dust and gas created a vacant space below, so the overlying surface collapsed into it, forming the crater. Well, the nights are not quite as long now in May, of course, but there are some nice things to observe, and I wish you well.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Antipodean listeners, here's Claire Bretherton with the night sky where you are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the May Jodcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. Our evening skies this month are dominated by Jupiter and Saturn, along with some of our brightest stars. Jupiter will be one of the first objects to appear, visible in the northeast shortly after the sun has set. A bright waxing gibbous moon will pass within 2 degrees of the planet on the evening of May the 8th. That's 4 moon diameters apart. Both will be visible within the same binocular field of view. Just to the right of Jupiter is Spica, the brightest star in the constellation of Virgo, and below, just above the horizon, is orange-coloured Arcturus, which at magnitude minus 0.05 is the brightest star in the northern celestial hemisphere, and the fourth brightest in the night sky. Arcturus has a similar mass to the Sun, but it is further along in its lifespan and has already expanded to become a red giant, with 25 times the diameter and 170 times the luminosity of our own star. When close to the horizon, it often appears to twinkle red and green as its light is broken up by our atmosphere. All three of the brighter stars are in the southern hemisphere and are also visible in our evening skies this month. The brightest Sirius sits halfway up the western sky at the beginning of the month, with Orion's belt now almost vertical below. Rigel and Betelgeuse, the seventh and ninth brightest stars, sit to either side of the belt. Both Orion and Sirius will soon be disappearing from our evening skies, before reappearing before the sun in the morning skies over the coming months. The second brightest star, Canopus, is circumpolar here in New Zealand, never dropping below the horizon. This month it sits a little higher than Sirius, further around towards the southwest. To complete the trio, the third brightest star, Alpha Centauri, is high in the southeast, pointing the way to the Southern Cross. Below Alpha Centauri, rising in the twilight sky, is the curve of stars making the body of Scorpius the Scorpion. Its brightest star, Antares, is a variable star, which ranges in brightness from magnitude 0.6 to 1.6, and is on average the 15th brightest in the night sky. Antares is a red supergiant, and one of the largest stars known, almost 900 times the diameter of the Sun. If it were placed at the centre of the solar system, its surface would extend to the middle of the asteroid belt. The name Antares means rival of Mars because of its striking red colour. To Maui, the star is known as Rehua and represents a drop of blood Maui pulled from his nose to bait his fish hook. In Aotearoa, the constellation of Scorpius is seen as Maui's hook, Te Matua Maui, which was used to pull up a great fish, which became the North Island of New Zealand. Scorpius, or Te Matua Maui, is our winter constellation and will be dominating our skies over the coming months, visible throughout the night. Sitting just 1.3 degrees to the west of Antares and visible in the same wide-field telescope view is the 5.9-magnitude globular cluster Messier 4, just about visible to the naked eye in a clear, dark sky. M4 is one of the nearest globular clusters in the sky, at just 7,200 light-years away, and is the only globular cluster that Messier was able to resolve with the modest equipment he was using. 20 years before, William Herschel was able to resolve all of the Messier globular clusters with his much larger telescopes. M4 is one of the loosest, most open globular clusters, and features a central bar of 11th magnitude stars, which can be resolved in a 10-centimeter telescope. Through binoculars, the cluster is seen as a round, hazy patch. Messier 4 contains some of the oldest stars known in our galaxy, with an estimated age of 13 billion years. Discovered by the Hubble Space Telescope in 1995, these white dwarf stars are the remnants of ancient solar-like stars that have already shed their outer layers into space. In 2003, a planet was discovered orbiting one of these white dwarfs and its pulsar companion, the first circumbinary, i.e. orbiting both stars, planet ever found, and the first planet detected in a globular cluster. With a mass of around 2.5 Jupiters and an estimated age of 12.7 billion years, it is also one of the oldest known extrasolar planets, earning it the unofficial nicknames Methuselah and the Genesis planet. A little over halfway from Antares to Arcturus is another globular cluster, Messier 5, or NGC 5904, in the constellation of Serpens. At almost sixth magnitude, it is also tough to spot with the naked eye in anything but the darkest conditions, but with binoculars it is easy to find, although you will need a small telescope to begin to resolve it, and start to pick out a slightly elongated shape and a few edged stars. With a calculated age of around 13 billion years, M5 is one of the oldest globular clusters known, and at 165 light-years in diameter and containing hundreds of thousands of stars, it is also one of the largest. It also contains 105 known variable stars, with the brightest and most easily observed variable 42 changing from magnitude 10.6 to 12.1 in just under 26.5 days. To find M5, you can star hop from the faint star 109 Virginis to 110 Virginis, and then around twice the distance again to find 5 Serpentis, and M5 is just 20 arc minutes to the northwest. Below Antares, and rising a little later in the evening, is bright cream-coloured Saturn. It is a great time to observe Saturn through a small telescope at the moment, with its rings set close to maximum tilt. Saturn's largest moon, Titan, can be spotted orbiting around 4 ring diameters from the planet, with several smaller, closer moons also visible in larger telescopes. In the morning sky, Venus rises in the east around 4 a.m. and is joined by Mercury around an hour and a half before sunrise. Mercury reaches its greatest elongation west on the 18th of May and is making its best morning appearance of the year, rising before twilight begins throughout the month. If you're out planet spotting in the early hours, then take a look for the Eta Aquarids meteor shower, which peaks around the 6th of May. The shower is caused by the Earth passing through the trail of debris left behind by the famous comet Halley. The shower appears to radiate from a point near the 4th magnitude star Eta Aquarii, one of the brightest in the zodiac constellation of Aquarius, representing the water bearer. The radiant won't rise in the eastern sky until around 2 a.m. here in New Zealand, so the best time to go meteor spotting is in the few hours before sunrise. At the shower's peak, you may be able to spot up to a meteor a minute, many of them fast and bright and leaving glowing trails behind them. Viewing conditions this year will be much better than last, with the moon setting on the other side of the sky in the early hours of the morning, giving you a good few hours of observing time before the sun rises just after 7 a.m. You may also have a chance for some binocular comet hunting this month, as Comet Pan-STARRS C2015ER61 heads towards perihelion, its closest approach to the Sun, on the 10th of May. At the start of the month, it will be moving from Aquarius through to Pisces and may be visible with binoculars in our morning skies. On the 4th of April, the comet experienced an outburst, brightening from 8th to 6th magnitude almost overnight. And whilst it is always hard to predict how bright a comet is going to get, this one is definitely worth keeping an eye on. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Space Place at Carter Observatory.